From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, here's the number to call, 800-462-7413. And Zorba, along with our calls, some interesting topics to talk about.
Yeah, we'll talk about sleep. So how much sleep do you get, and what does that depend upon, and how do you function with that?
And?
We're going to talk about reading on a screen rather than reading on paper. What do you absorb in both, and what difference it makes to you and your brain?
And our recipe.
Thai chicken and cashew stir fry. If you like Thai food, and I love Thai food, if you like chicken, if you like cashew, if you like stir fry, this is a recipe for you that you will love. I promise you.
800-462-7413 is our number. And Zorba, let's welcome our first caller, a listener with us in Asheville, New York. Hi.
Hello. I've been hunting wild ginseng for about 50 years. And according to literature and several Chinese I've talked to, it has powerful medicinal properties. Through the years, I've taken the root many different ways. And, I've taken it raw, tea, Chinese style, with a double boiler for 6 hours.
So they boil it for 6 hours. They simmer it for six hours.
With a whiskey, ginger root, chicken breast. And then after 6 hours, you discard the chicken breast and you drink the broth. That's the way the Chinese take it.
Oh,
okay, now here's the thing. It never seemed to do much for me.
What were you expecting it to do? What did you want it to do?
There's a whole list of things in herbal medicine and magazines and literature, that whole list of things that, you know, is supposed to invigorate you, give you a lot of energy, brain power, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. It is. Ginseng is, for the Chinese, the magic bullet. It'll improve your sex life. It'll give you more energy. You'll be better at work. You won't get colds. It'll get rid of cancer. Tom is smiling now. I've read a lot about ginseng. And Wisconsin, by the way, is renowned for its ginseng. So renowned that there is fake Wisconsin branded ginseng in China now, where there's counterfeit ginseng. So the wild ginseng is rather treasured. What do you get? You get quite a bit for that, right?
Well, I get wild ginseng now is selling for $500. Plus a pound dry root. Like I say, I've hunted it for years and years and years, and I've taken it myself and sold it. But anyway, all these years of Zorba, I thought to myself, I wonder if there's some way, how do they know if something has medicinal properties in it, and how are they possessed? Some kind of a scientific method they have
to find out what's going on in there. You hit the right word right there. There's no science behind it. Now, and let me explain why. First of all, no pharmaceutical company will ever test it because they're not going to make a profit. So you put them off to the side. And then you've got a few studies here and there, scientific studies. But science is also limited in funding, and you have a choice between stem cell research and ginseng research and breast cancer research. Ginseng is pretty far down the line. So the only information is anecdotal information, which is not that reliable.
Yeah.
People say, I took it, and I was able to think better and do this better. And so for the Chinese, it's very important. And it's quite a seller in America. Now, there's something interesting. There is the placebo effect that we all know about. And the placebo effect works 30 to 40% of the time. It tends to disappear over time. But the placebo effect is quite powerful. And that's really our internal ability to get better. Fight disease, be stronger, feel better, have more energy. So when people take it, I think they're activating the placebo effect. And some people say, it's better for them. But the fact is, there's no science behind it. So if I were you, I would stop taking it. That's what I would do. If I were you, I would stop taking it.
Well, Zorba, I've been doing this for over 50 years.
I would continue. I would continue hunting the wild ginseng because other people will take it. But if you haven't gotten value after 50 years, you're not going to get value after 50 more.
I know, but like my whole point is, the big mystery in my mind is, Is there some method that, like I say, you just explained it to me. I was just wondering if there's some way they could find out and say, hey, hello, wait a minute.
There is something in here. And if you want to donate like a couple of million dollars to do that study, I'm sure the ginseng people would welcome that.
A couple of million?
Yeah.
Really? No wonder we're having problems with Eastern medicines.
You got it. That's exactly it.
Okay. You've answered my question, Zorba.
Thank you. Thank you for your call, and thanks for your comments.
Yeah, we appreciate it. 800-462-7413, our toll-free number. And a listener with us now in Spokane, Washington. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
I got a question about two drugs, gabapentin and Lyrica. I'm a cancer survivor from Agent Orange, and I've been on a lot of drugs for a lot of years, and now they want to put me on Lyrica, and I'm very, very frightened of the mixture of those two drugs along with the other eight or nine I take over the course of a 24-hour period.
Uh-huh. What are they? By the way, you don't take gabapentin and Lyrica together. You would take gabapentin, which is a generic, or Lyrica, which is called pregabalin, and that's a name brand. I mean, so they're two different drugs in the same class, anti-seizure drugs that work, that are mostly not used for seizures. They're used for mood disorder. They can help mood. They're used for neuropathic pain, severe low back pain caused by, we'll say, a slip discs, et cetera. And they're used for sleep. So they're used for other things. Why do they want to use it? Why are they suggesting that you take it?
When I came out of chemotherapy, mm-hmm. I had horrible peripheral neuropathy in my mm-hmm. legs.
And that's another indication along with fibromyalgia.
And it's continued for uh-huh. 10 years, so I've been very comfortable mm-hmm. with the gabapentin and uh-huh. the hydrocodone.
Yeah.
And,
so why do they want to stop the gabapentin and go to Lyrica?
I think she thinks it's safer than the frequency with which I take the hydrocodone.
Well, they want often one of the goals. First of all, I think they're pretty similar drugs. There are differences between them. If one works for the other and one is generic, then I usually will stick with that. On the other hand, if they're giving you more to try to reduce your hydrocodone load, that becomes a different issue. And the Lyrica might be more effective than the gabapentin. You can't tell. And if you tolerate a gabapentin, you'll tolerate Lyrica. They're very much in the same class. And if that makes your pain better and reduces your need for hydrocodone, that's good medicine.
Okay.
But your goal is to try to maximize that so you can minimize the hydrocodone.
This is tough. You've been fighting since Vietnam.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
So tough. Yeah. So tough. Such a disaster. So much Agent Orange stuff out there, you know, side effect of what Dow Chemical, I think it was Dow Chemical, I'm not 100% sure, called it a benign defoliant, worthy of using in your backyard or in Vietnam. Thank you for your call,
sir. Yeah, good luck in the future.
And thank you for your service.
Okay, God bless you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 800-462-7413. New information on how much sleep is enough sleep.
So how much sleep do you get?
I get 7-8 hours.
What time you go to sleep?
Sleep at 10, up at 6.
Okay, and pretty regular. I mean, you may get up during the night.
Yeah, I may go 10:30, 10:45.
Yeah. So I've discovered I have this thing called a jawbone, and it measures sleep. And what it does is it measures arm movement. You know, and I push a button when I go to sleep. And
what do you mean you have a jawbone?
Well, I've got a thing it's called. It's like a Fitbit. It's
thing you use for walking.
Yeah, it's for walking. But it also, if I push a button, it measures when I go to sleep and when I get up.
Okay.
And then it measures how deep the sleep is based on arm movement. I mean, it's not very scientific, but it gives that. And I thought I was getting 8 to 9 hours of sleep, and I've discovered a lot of times I'm only getting 6 hours of sleep, which kind of...
You mean you're moving around during
moving on or getting up in the middle of the night. I'm going to sleep at 11:30 or 12 o'clock and getting up at 5:30. I thought I was really getting 7-8 hours of sleep. I have been deluding myself. And I need more sleep. On the weekend, I get more sleep. Well, I would probably do better getting more sleep during the day. And these are new recommendations by the National Sleep Foundation.
Okay, tell us what they are.
Okay, newborns. Guess how much sleep. Newborn. No, don't look. You got to guess.
Okay, newborns, like 21 hours.
Yeah. No, that's right. 14 is around 14 to 17 hours.
Okay.
Okay, how about infants, toddlers?
That would go down maybe 13, 12.
Yeah, that's right. They would go down. How about preschoolers?
preschoolers. Does it keep on going down? Maybe 11?
I'm not telling
10,
you this. This 10, is 11. A guess.
10, 11.
This is, I'm, 10, 11. That's about right. Good. How about school-age children? So they're not preschool. They're like in fourth grade. How much do they need?
I'm guessing again. 9.
9 to 11 hours. Excellent. Excellent. Okay. Now let's talk about teenagers, because that's actually where we're going to make the big impact. What do teenagers
this
need?
This is the crisis time, I'm guessing.
Right. Yeah, that's right. Go ahead.
You want me to actually guess? Okay.
Amy versus a fake guess?
I think 9 still, 9.
Excellent.
Ten.
8 to 10. Give me 5. You know, that could work.
Yeah, okay.
It's 8 to 10 hours. Yeah. So let me tell you a little bit about a study that was just published in the British Medical Journal that looked at teenagers' sleep time, sleep duration time, and sleep latency, the ability to go to sleep. Mm-hmm. And they've discovered something very important. Teens who are in front of screens just before they go to sleep, okay? They're doing social media either online or on their phone. TV. No TV. We know TV should be out of the bedroom. We know TV is bad for teenage sleep. But now we're just talking about social media, being on there with Skype. Often take 60 minutes to fall asleep versus teens who do not take an hour of screen time before they go, who often fall asleep in 10 to 15 minutes. So they're getting less sleep. And their sleep is more disturbed, it turned out. So for some reason, screens, in other words, screen time, is disturbing teen time and sleep. Now, there's circadian rhythm that we adults have, which has to do with cortisol levels and when they wake up. It's really not, you know, in teens, it's just developing.
Teens have been not getting enough sleep even before all
Well, that's because their circadian rhythm is off. They don't have it, so they can stay up till 1 or 2 in the morning when we would be out the next day. However, they need 9 to 11 hours. They need a good 9 to 10 hours of sleep because they'll do better in school. They have better they are better to stay on task. And they have less, quote, oppositional behavior. Do you know what oppositional behavior?
Being like bullies or?
Well, at home, it means just say no. You know, that's what it means, that they say no. And they're more likely to bully in school and so on.
Yeah, okay.
So I think the bottom line is where many people are not getting enough sleep. And adults really need 7 to 9 hours.
Okay.
If you're getting 6 hours, it's not
good. Now, let me ask you this. We don't all need the same amount of sleep.
Right, but we generally do. We don't need it. We know that 5 hours of sleep, people can rarely get along for more than a few days with 5 hours of sleep. They're outliers. There are some people who need 5 hours of sleep. And there's some people who need 9 hours of sleep to be in bed. Yeah. But most need somewhere around 7 hours of sleep. And this article showed that we should move towards that. And what we do as a society is we go, hey, I'm burning the candle at both ends. I'm hardly getting any sleep. I'm up at night. Versus, hey, I'm in bed for 7 to 9 hours. And for teenagers, this is critical.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. And back to the phones now, Zorba. A listener with us in Toma, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, how are you today?
Fine. How can we help?
Well, I've been diagnosed with, multiple of things. But right now what's the issue is the GERD. And what's been happening since about 2011 is I'm hospitalized with extreme vomiting bile. They have put me on nausea medication. It's called metoclopram, whatever it is, lactulose, and Regulin.
How is it working?
It doesn't work well.
It doesn't. So this is, you were hospitalized for GERD? That's unusual. You're on PPIs, proton pump inhibitors, like Prilosec, or?
Well, I take a Zantac over the counter.
Mm-hmm.
They discontinued the Prilosec.
Uh-huh.
I also have diabetes. Mm-hmm. I've also been diagnosed with peripheral neuropathy, central nerve disorder, and fibromyalgia.
Okay, so you've got a bunch of...
Yeah.
You have a bunch of other things. But let's zero in on the GERD. Zantac, you're taking how much over the counter?
I take 3 a day at the 75 milligrams.
Okay, so you're taking 3 75s. Okay, so you're at a suboptimal dose. The most optimal dose of Zantac is 150 milligrams twice a day.
Okay.
So that's the first thing I would do. Now, why did they take away the PPI, like Prilosec?
They said that it wasn't helping.
Uh-huh. Well, was it helping or not? How's your pain?
It was lower. The acid was lower.
Mm-hmm.
Because at first, you know, I just vomit the acid.
Oh, terrible. It's terrible.
Yeah, and it goes on, and then I'm hospitalized, and it takes me, the last time I was in the hospital, it took me almost a month and a half to get back to even eating a normal meal.
No, it's terrible. So this is all GERD hospitalization. Did they talk to you about surgery?
No, they've never mentioned surgery. They've never. One doctor said that I have a hiatal hernia, but nobody. Okay. They send me to all these specialists, and they all have these different ideas, and they all want to change my medication. Mm-hmm. But what I've done is, you know, I'm eating more yogurts. I'm eating more.
Okay. Good.
Healthier foods.
Good.
And I've cut down my protein intake.
Excellent.
Which, you know, seem to. And I am a proteinaholic. I love my protein.
So it sounds like you've made some dietary changes. Well, I have some suggestions. First of all, with GERD, especially if it happens at night, is the head of your bed elevated on blocks so you're a little bit higher?
Yes. I actually have a wedge.
We have to wedge. That's an important part of GERD. If you were my patient, I would try you on Zantac and Prilosec, and I would maximize both. So I'd take 150 milligrams of Zantac plus 20 of Prilosec on an empty stomach in the morning when I got up, 30 minutes before having anything to eat. Period. And then I would take another one in the evening, probably at 6, 7 o'clock early in the evening again, a Zantac and a Prilosec, 20 milligrams of Prilosec, 150 of Zantac. I take that twice a day and see what it does. And then I'd keep a food diary, kind of you're eating a better food, and you can still eat protein, but you want to find out what you're eating that's doing it. But no food if you go to sleep at 10 after like 7:30, 8 o'clock. No food in your stomach 2 hours before you go to sleep.
It should be an empty stomach. Now, when my sugar goes low, what do I do there?
Well, you have to work.
That's a big thing.
Yeah, you have to work with your diabetologist, you know, either your physician or your internist, and you have to work on that so that your sugar doesn't go too low. If it goes too low, then you have to take something sugary, but it should be minimal. In other words, it should be a highly concentrated sugar substance so that you're taking that and you're not going to have a lot in your stomach. And the sugar will be absorbed right away.
Okay.
But that's what I would do, and I would work with the person who's prescribing your insulin to make sure you have, you know, you may run a little higher at night, but if your insulin control through hemoglobin is A1C, you may run higher. So I think seeing a nutritionist, talking to a nutritionist, finding out a little bit more about what to eat, no food 2 hours before you go to sleep, put the bed like you are, use the wedge, and then take the medication. I would try that, and then give us a call back. Let us know what happens.
All right, I appreciate it very much, and I'm a big fan of your show. I've been listening to it for about 10 years.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate
thank you
that.
So much.
Thanks
appreciate
a lot.
That.
800-462-7413. And before we pause for a quick break, Zorba, it looks as though the canine division of the Grammar Police would like to be heard. So get ready. We're about to embark on a first here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. The Poodle Police.
Oh, no, it's the
today's error is pointed out to us by Mo, a standard poodle from Madison, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Mo writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba, I must take exception when you recently referred to your poodle as a French poodle. We are actually German in origin. We got the French label because in the 1700s, the Russian court gave the French court a pair of standard poodles, and the French began the humiliating practice of giving us ridiculous haircuts. Poodle is probably from the German word for puddle. We are, after all, working dogs, and we are excellent water retrievers. Thanks for your great show."
That's funny. They're right about the French and the haircut. There's no doubt about it. My dog, Izzy, does not have a haircut like that. So, well, I stand corrected. You mean, so I have a German poodle
and not
a French poodle?
Yes, you do.
Well, what's my poodle going to say? I've been telling him he's French all along. He eats the proper food.
Arf, arf, arf.
Got it.
If you have a bone to pick with Zorba, Unleash the power of the grammar police force upon us. Just send your grievances along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Our recipe is coming up. That's next. More of your calls, of course, our medical myth buster, too, here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again is 800-462-7413 if you'd like to talk with Zorba. But before our next call, Zorba, our recipe, Thai chicken and cashew stir fry.
Right, and we've established you like Thai food, you like chicken, and you like cashew.
Yeah, yeah.
So that means you will like this recipe. Mm-hmm. This is something you'd like to eat. And I happen to love Thai food, and I often don't make it at home. This is an easy at-home recipe.
Okay.
It's got some extra ingredients you'll have to get, but it's easy. So 2 tablespoonfuls of peanut oil or canola oil. And I'd probably use peanut oil because you can fry it hotter than canola oil.
Okay. Peanut or canola oil.
1 tablespoon of boneless, skinless chicken breast trimmed and cut into 1-inch pieces. Now, texture here is important. You can either cut it with a knife and make it chunky, mm-hmm. or you can pull it apart depending on your perspective.
Okay.
3 scallions cut into 1-inch pieces.
3 scallions cut into 1-inch pieces.
2 small fresh red chilies. So red chilies, semi-hot, as hot as you want to have it. But these are not jalapenos, though. They're red chilies.
Okay, that's two fresh red chilies.
A couple of garlic cloves are thinly sliced.
2 garlic cloves.
A large zucchini quartered lengthwise and slice it into 1/2-inch pieces. 2 cups of broccoli cut into the florets. Mm-hmm.
2 cups of broccoli.
2 tablespoonfuls of fish sauce.
2 big tea fish sauce.
Now, something about fish sauce. Fish sauce is kind of the equivalent of salt, but it's much more robust, has much more umami fullness. And if you buy a bottle and it's been there too long, it's not very good. So I recommend buying a small bottle of fish sauce and then buying more bottles afterwards, because basically it gets bad over time. Getting back to our recipe. 2 teaspoons of lime juice must be fresh.
Mm-hmm. 2 little tea lime juice.
2 teaspoons of molasses.
2 little tea molasses.
You may buy that in the store. 2 teaspoons of cornstarch.
2 little tea cornstarch.
1/2 cup of toasted cashews.
1/2 cup toasted cashews.
That's right. So you're going to take cashews and put them on medium heat for a while and mm-hmm. toast them. Mm-hmm. And 1/4 cup of fresh basil, preferably Thai basil. So heat a tablespoon of peanut oil or canola oil in a large flat bottom, a nice wok or a skillet over medium high heat. Add the chicken, stir, and cook it for about 4 to 5 minutes, and then transfer it to a plate.
Mm-hmm.
Add the remaining, which is another tablespoonful of oil, scallions, and chilies. Cook and stir until they start to soften. That's about 30 seconds. Then add the garlic, broccoli, zucchini, and cook. Stirring until the broccoli and the zucchini are tender, another 3 minutes or so. Meanwhile, whisk the fish sauce, lime juice, molasses, and cornstarch into a small bowl. Stir in the sauce and the chicken along with accumulated juices in the pan.
Mm-hmm.
Cook, stirring gently until the sauce is bubbly and thickened, about 30 seconds to a minute. Remove it from the heat. Stir in those cashews that you toasted and serve, mm-hmm. and the basil on top.
Yummy, and I'm guessing heart healthy as well.
Yeah, it is. 300 calories a serving. And if you'd like a copy, Tom, what do you think they should do?
I don't know. Turn on the computer.
Turn on the computer. Get it fired up. Boot it up. Yeah, that's it. Plug it in. www.zorbapastor.org. And, I'm sure you're on Facebook all the time. You can come to our show through Facebook. I know Tom tweets incessantly. He's been tweeting in the middle of the show.
I think I know what that means.
Do you have a Twitter account?
No.
You have a Facebook account?
Of course not.
Do you have a
Well, I do.
You do.
By proxy.
That's right. Your wife. yeah. by proxy. Do you have a telephone?
Yeah, wired right in there, so it works every time.
That's right. It works every 99.9999.
Roll it around.
That's right. Roll it around. Yeah, you got it. That's exactly it. Dial. True dialer.
800-462-7413. The number, that's 800-462-7413. And Zorba, a listener with us now in Buffalo, New York. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Sure. How can we help?
Well, it's kind of an awkward question because I feel like half of America is going to hate me for asking it, but I am constantly approached due to my size, and it's not because I'm large, but it's because I'm slight and skinny, and it just makes me feel awkward and weird, and I was wondering if there was something that Dr. Zorba could help me with by telling me, like, what I can say to these people, like, oh, I'm just skinny because I'm skinny, or what to do.
Okay, let's do the check. Height and weight.
My height is 5'10¾", and my weight, I range between 133 and 138.
Okay, are you ready? I'm 6 feet tall, and the last time I stepped on a scale, which was just a couple of days ago, 137.
Ah,
so we're partners on this, but I got to tell you, it's never bothered me. And Zorba has never said, hey, you're too skinny.
Well, it's because I'm nice.
That is exactly. You're polite about it. You know, you don't call up people on their body.
But Tom, so you never were bothered by this?
No, I've gone up to as high as 150. That was a few years ago. Mm-hmm. But I started working out, and I lost all that weight for some reason.
So people ask you. Well, what do people ask you? What do they say to you?
Well, it's rarely an asking. It's kind of like, you're so skinny, or oh, every time I see you, you're losing weight, and all this stuff, and it's not like it's mean-hearted or anything.
But it's very interesting because, you know, in our society, people are overweight. Lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of people are overweight. But 5 to 10% of the population is actually thin or underweight, according to certain standards. And so people who are thin sometimes are maltreated. They say, you should put on weight, you'll look healthier. And it's because we have started to visualize people as bigger. And I'll give you a perfect example. Marshfield, Wisconsin, which has an obesity rate that ranges to about 85%. And they were a number of years ago, there's a great clinic there. The Marshfield Clinic does fabulous research. And they did a survey of people, asking people in the community, what percentage of the people in our community do you think are overweight? Now, in reality, it's about around between 70 and 85%. But people thought it was about 20%. Mm-hmm. In other words, they were looking at overweight as the people who were weighed more than they did for the most part. And so the shift has been towards heavier and heavier as the normal. You know, you're at a good weight.
Okay.
You can't put on weight. What do you eat? Do you like to eat?
Yeah, I like to eat a lot. I have lunch and dinner at least every day. Uh-huh. And then I sometimes skip breakfast. I don't really like breakfast. But I like sushi. I like Asian cuisine, Mediterranean, Italian.
What do you do for a living?
I am actually a primary instructor with a non-for-profit, so I work with individuals in our community who need extra support with skills or soft skills, like that.
Good job. Do you exercise?
My job is very active, and I do go on walks about 3 or 4 times a week for about a half hour.
Excellent. So you've got a good appetite. You exercise because you go on walks. Your job is active. You're just, from a society point of view, say, what's wrong? The other thing is, a lot of times they look at thin people and say, oh, you've lost weight. You must have cancer. I mean, that default sometimes is illness, when in reality, you are much healthier than most of the population. So,
oh, my gosh. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks so much for your call.
Thank you.
800-462-7413.
Well, people who are thin are often discriminated against, just like people who are morbidly obese. I mean, they don't fit within a realm, and there can be discrimination against them. And clearly, our listener felt discriminated against, but you, Tom, probably because you're a Navy guy, didn't feel discriminated at all.
When I was younger, as a teen, you know, when you're a teen, you're nervous and about everything.
Awkward.
And I felt really awkward. No, but people didn't say much to me, I don't think. But then as you get older, it's sort of like, It is what it is.
It is what it is. Yeah, there you go. 1-800-462-1234. No, that's not the number.
What is the number?
I can't remember because I never. I don't say it. I just hear it.
Yeah, I'd say it now, but the listeners all
know
it
say
anyway.
No, say it.
Butte, Montana listener knew our number and called. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Several years ago, I fell from a ladder and created some damage to my neck, which has caused me a great deal of pain over the years. And last year, I had some injections in my neck of lidocaine, which caused more pain. And since that time, I keep getting this red spot on my neck, and I thought I was being bit by a spider. And then I was told that it wasn't a spider bite, but actually that the injection had activated the herpes simplex 1 virus in my neck.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering how plausible that might be.
Well, first of all, herpes, when we get a herpes infection, herpes simplex 1 is generally above the waist, not always, and herpes simplex 2 is below the waist, once again, but not always. Cold sores in our mouth, not all cold sores are herpes, and then they're in the genitalia, you can get herpes infections there. Once you get a herpes infection, it is for life. Stays in the ganglion of the cells, and it just hangs out there. And it can be brought on by a whole bunch of things. Trauma, sun can do it. And then it also just gets on randomly. So how long have you had this, and how often does it come up?
It comes up every few months.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I have tried taking all three of the antivirals unsuccessfully.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I had that stomach reaction to acyclovir,
mm-hmm.
valacyclovir mm-hmm. made my nose bleed, and famciclovir made mm-hmm. my head pain worse than it was before. So I can't tolerate, the three antivirals.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. If I were you, I would try the valacyclovir, because it sounds like you had a nosebleed, but you may have had the nosebleed from something else. So I would see if that worked and keep my nose moist by putting some Vaseline in at nighttime and turning in a vaporizer where I sleep. And I think I would do that because the drugs, if they work, are very effective in doses to basically keep the virus under control. And some people take it every day. Some people take it when they know they're going to be in a situation where it will come up, for instance, on a ski trip or on the beach. And then some people just take it when they know they're getting the infection and they have that tingling in there. But I go back to that.
Okay.
A lot of times, side effects of medication are just coincidental problems.
Okay. All right. Well, I will. I'll try that.
Thank you. Thanks for your call.
Thanks for sharing. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 800-462-7413. And before the break, Zorba, time to break out your robe and gavel for another episode of Judge Zorba. Today's
Wait a second. Do I get to hit the gavel first?
Yeah, you should. I was waiting for that.
Judge,
kind of.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Judge Zorba.
Good.
Love it. Huh. Love it. What it makes me feel?
Like
important.
A judge.
Yeah, like a judge. Yeah.
Yeah. Today's case comes to us from a listener named John who needs a dairy debate settled with his friend. He writes, Dr. Zorba, recently you were talking about pasteurization of milk and milk fat, and you explained that pasteurization is the process where milk is heated to kill bacteria, which is correct. But that has nothing to do with the fat in milk. It's the process of homogenization where the milk fat is broken down so much that it won't separate from the milk itself. A friend told me that before milk was homogenized, the fat in milk actually passed right through you. But because homogenization breaks the fat down so fine, it is now absorbed right into our bodies. This makes perfect sense to me, which is why I only drink skim milk. Is my friend right that homogenized milk fat is absorbed via our digestive system, or was it always that way?
No, it's your friend. Can I do the gavel first, or I do it? I'll do the gavel at the end.
Okay.
Your friend is wrong. Your friend is wrong. You know, it used to be in the day, back in the day, or on dairy farms or with raw milk, there would be a little on the bottle. There'd be a little place at the top that it basically was the cream, you know, so the cream part. And then, and people would put that on their cereal or in their coffee, and then the milk would be underneath it. It wasn't skim milk, but it wasn't like, you know, vitamin D milk, which is whole milk now. And when they homogenize things, they put the fat all the way through the milk. The fat is absorbed, whether it comes through as a clunk on the top of the milk, or it comes through homogenization. So your friend is wrong in that this method changes how our body absorbs it. Mm-hmm. Our body absorbs it if it's there in either case.
Mm-hmm. Now the gavel.
Oh, I get to do it. Oh, no, it's the gavel police.
No, it isn't. It's Judge Zorba.
And I can't sing. Have you noticed?
I did. Have a debate you need settled? Add your case to the docket by sending it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org or come to us through Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Back to the phones. We'll go after a quick break. Coming up, more of your calls. We have our medical myth buster, too, all right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Before we get back to the phone, Zorba, we have a topic about reading on screens as opposed to reading on a piece of paper.
Oh, yeah. Now, so, Tom, I know you have a dumb phone. You don't have a smartphone. For those of us with a smartphone.
My dumb phone, by the way, I was going to say is connected to a cord, but it isn't really.
Well, some of those phones are. Yeah. But, you know, we read on screens all the time, either computer screens or smartphone screens. And the question is there a difference in learning between one versus another? And I think this is really important for children, especially when we're raising children because of tablets and the continuous use of tablets with kids. This was an article that came out concerning whether or not there was a difference in what you look at and what you actually understand. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that when you look at computer screens, at least according to this study, information that's concrete is something that you absorb, like where am I going to this movie or this show, or let me have a fact of, you know, of where this particular movie or show was made, something like that. Because we often use that for short, concrete examples. But when it comes to abstract thinking, it turns out, at least in this particular study, that people did better when they read on paper. Abstract thinking being something you have to sort of think about and imagine about. And that's very, very interesting.
Somebody's life story or philosophy or something.
Yeah, or philosophy or something else. And it may be something about the fact that when you're actually looking at a piece of paper, you're functioning differently. Now, the reason why this is important is it's important for all of us when we're looking at things and trying to absorb things. But it's very important for children if they're beginning to learn. Yeah.
Now, it seems to me you had some qualifiers in there. Do you not trust this study?
Well, I don't have complete qualifiers, but I have some qualifiers. First of all, for many years, we've been saying, do not get your children in front of a computer screen too long. And I think that still is the case. However, I think it's the case for passive learning versus active learning. Because there was a study out of the British Medical Journal that showed that 2-year-olds can swipe across screens. So if I'm sitting with my gorgeous, wonderful granddaughter who is now 1 year of age, and I'm sitting with a book versus sitting with a tablet and I'm pointing things and interacting with her, isn't it the same thing? And that's why I question this study and whether or not it's very specific.
Well, now, I all the time use my Kindle for books. Should I not do that anymore?
No, I don't think it's the Kindle thing. I think this is the thing of the fact that we are maybe using computer screens for different things than when we're using books. But when you sit with a Kindle, you're sitting, you're looking, you're thinking, you're not retrieving instant information like where is that restaurant or how did the Packers do the other day or other types of things. I think that computer screens and paper both play a role in our learning. And I think this study shows that we absorb different things within our brain. And stay tuned because we'll learn more soon.
800-462-7413 is our number. 800-462-7413. And Zorba, a listener, joins us now from Mundelein, Illinois. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
Well, I'm really calling about my son. He's 32 years old. He's in excellent physical health, but he's had this weird thing happen to him. A few months ago, he started having pain every day about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and it was severe enough to force him to lie in the fetal position on his office floor for about an hour until it subsided.
Wow.
And he went through every gastro test known to man, and they never found anything. Mm-hmm. And then one day, he suffered an anaphylactic shock and was taken to the hospital, and they discovered that he had a peanut allergy.
Oh.
He'd been eating a handful of peanuts every day with his lunch. And the blood indicator said that he has an extremely high level of those indicators.
Correct.
And since he stopped eating peanuts, he stopped having the stomach issues.
Too. Right. Very interesting. I have to tell you, I was recently on a small airplane, not a super small, but one of those 50-passenger airplanes. And the stewardess announced that they would only be serving pretzels because there's someone on the airplane with a severe peanut allergy. Mm-hmm. And so they will not be serving peanuts. And I bring this up because some people have severe allergies. You have to be, as you know, extremely careful. There was one case of a patient who came into the emergency room, and the doctor who examined the patient had just had a handful of peanuts. And as they were getting closer, they got very close to the patient because they're examining them and listening to the chest, the patient went into anaphylactic shock.
Just right from being near?
Just from the smell of the peanuts, there was enough in the air with the smell or, because he had just finished a mouthful of peanuts. So they have, for the most part, in many parts of the country, they have banned peanuts from the emergency room. So he has a severe peanut allergy. Does he have an EpiPen with him for adrenaline?
He does now, but the odd thing is he never had this allergy. I was a neglectful mother. Yeah. I raised my kids on peanut butter sandwiches.
Yeah, that's right. No, you can develop the allergy at any time. A lot of kids have it when they're younger, but you can get an allergy. Penicillin, you can get an allergy when you're older. Some people get hay fever when they're older. Most get it when another. So I don't think you were a neglectful mother. You were a thrifty mother by giving them peanut butter. So that was it. He just developed it. Now, how does he like not eating peanuts now? Because it's sort of part of his lunch.
Yeah, he kind of doesn't like it. He eats other nuts, though. But the problem, the really weird thing is after everything subsided, they took him into the hospital for a day and had him sit and eat peanut butter all day.
Oh, uh-huh.
And he had no effect.
Well, I don't know what they were testing at that point.
That doesn't make any
but
sense.
once you have a serious peanut allergy, stay away from peanuts. That is the bottom line. Once you have a serious peanut allergy, do not eat peanuts. Well, thanks for sharing that with us, and you were a good mother. You were a good mother. I can tell from your voice you were a good mother.
Well, thank you very much, and you have a great day.
Thanks for the call.
Well, why would somebody do that? I don't know.
Maybe why they were testing them, but we do test people. We do challenge them and test them in optimal conditions to see what may be causing their problem. So perhaps this was that.
800-462-7413. And before our next call, Zorba, time again for our medical myth buster. Today's question comes to us from a Wisconsin listener named Colleen. She writes, "Dear Dr. Pastor, I use unscented laundry products at home, but on a recent visit to a relative, I did some laundry. The detergent was scented, so I rewashed everything when I got home, but I cannot get the scent out. I'm sneezing, and my eyes are running because of this. I have washed the clothes numerous times in unscented products. I tried adding vinegar. That didn't work. I tried adding baking soda. That didn't work. I have disliked laundry scent and air fresheners for years, but now when I'm out in public and I happen to be near someone whose clothes smell like the laundry scent, I start sneezing and my eyes itch and run. Could I have developed an allergy I didn't have before? Help."
Yeah, well, the answer is yes, you could have developed an allergy. First of all, to get to your clothes, I don't know if there's a scent on them or not, but I would have other people smell the clothes and see if they can have a scent. Sometimes we will associate a scent with an object, and the scent is no longer there, but when we see the object, we then We don't visualize the scent. We can smell it. And so the first thing I'd ask for, I mean, because usually you can wash the scent out of your clothes, is put it on the sanitize cycle. We have a sanitize cycle on our new, not brand new, but pretty new washing machine. I would do the sanitize cycle, and I would do it once or twice because it gets super hot and gets rid of stuff. So I'd see if that works. If not, obviously you can't wear those clothes, but I'd have somebody else check it out first to see, is this
what
a real scent?
Saying this could just be all in her head?
Well, it's a memory. It's not necessarily, you know, you're not nuts. It's a memory that's in your head. But on the other end, the scent could be there. You have somebody else who really has a good sense of smell. Do they smell anything? Well, you know, but you may still smell it. So you can't wear those clothes then if you're really bothered by it. It might just bring up the memory, and that's enough to set things off. Now, you can develop allergies, as we just talked about, when you get older and if you have that problem. And the big problem is people in the elevators, and it's usually not clothing. It's usually cologne. And it's a major problem in cities like New York City where you have three or four people who get in an elevator and go up to the 70th floor, and all the colognes are mixing together, and you feel like vomiting, you know, because you're just too much to do. And that's really where it is.
Yeah. At the gym, people who wear cologne and perfume.
Yeah, you've noticed. Do they put the cologne on before they exercise or after they exercise?
Well, before. I mean, they show up in it. But for some, and people go there to sweat.
Yeah, no, that's right. Yeah. Perfume. Do they wear, are these, have you ever looked at the clothes? Are these the people who wear spandex?
I don't know.
Also working on the clothes?
Are they in the gym, they wear the same stuff as
No. Look at the clothes. I bet they wear clothes that are more fashionable than you. You are not a cologne person. I bet their clothes are newer and more fashionable. Ask them. Go up to them and say, how new are your clothes?
By the way, I hate the way you smell.
That's a good opener.
Are you itching?
How new are your clothes?
Are you itching to ask Zorba something? Just send it along in email to
Zorba@WBR.org.
800-462-7413, our number, and a St. Paul, Minnesota listener with us now. Hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
Well, I am calling about my son, who is now an 18-year-old. But when he was younger, I would say between the ages of 8 and 12, he had several or periodic seizures where he would pass out, his eyes would roll back in his head, and he would, you know, shake. And this was usually, I think, at times when he was either upset or frightened or something, but I guess I'm not sure either. When we saw a family doctor at the time, they said he would likely grow out of it, and I can't remember what they called it. But at any rate, he hadn't had any for some time, but in the recent past, like within the last couple of years, he did have one or two again. And I don't know if it's related to or if they're totally separate, but he also has an issue with tremors in his hands when he tries to do, you know, things with fine motor skills. Like if he's doing something detailed or trying to grab something small or whatever, his hands really shake a lot. And I'm wondering, A, if they're related, B, if these tremors are anything to be concerned about, and if there's anything that can be done about it or what
now,
brings
is he
it
on. Is he on any medication at all for
his
seizures?
Not.
He's not.
No.
And how long has he been seizure-free?
About 2 years, I suppose.
Well, I mean, the issue, you know, there are issues with seizures and driving. That's why I'm asking. Does he drive?
He does.
Okay. And the neurologist says at this point he doesn't need to be on an anti-seizure medication.
Well, we've not seen a neurologist. His family doctor indicated that.
He should see a neurologist.
Okay.
Because the issue is seizures and driving and death. You know, you have a seizure when you're driving, you get into a crash, you die or you kill somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
He absolutely, definitely should see a neurologist. He should have a full workup for seizures, and they should determine whether or not he should be on medication. Now, some people, over time, and they have sort of a protocol, after they've been on medicine and they've been seizure-free for 5 to 7 years, go off medication. And there's a way they do it, but there's no total predictability, so it can be issues. But if he's had a seizure in the last 2 years, he's got to see a neurologist. That's critical. And also, they'll determine if the tremor is related to this. It probably isn't. There's something called benign essential tremor. It's not benign. It's not essential, but it's not Parkinson's. And he might have that. That's very common. And there are a series of drugs, minimal drugs called beta blockers that you can give that can really help tremendously if he's got a tremor. But first, he needs a diagnosis, and the neurologist should do it. So you need a neurologist for the seizure and the diagnosis. I don't think a family doc, and I'm a family doc, should handle this question of whether or not he needs to be on a seizure med, because I think if he had a seizure 2 years ago and he were my kid, he'd be on a seizure medication.
Okay. And so you think they're likely not related? But
no, they might be related. They might be related. He needs a full evaluation. That's critical. And the seizure stuff is really critical. It's not minor. It's critical. In other words, you should bring him in, not in an emergency, but you should bring him in sooner versus later. What if he has a seizure when he's driving?
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah, and yes. I don't know why his family doc said he doesn't need to be on medicines or doesn't need a workup for it. If it's a real seizure, he does.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, I thank you so much. That's of great help to me, and
you're,
I will go ahead
welcome.
And take action on that.
You're welcome. Thanks so much for
we
your
appreciate
call.
Appreciate the call. Thanks. And before we head out today, Zorba, let's take an email question from a Duluth, Minnesota listener named Amber. She writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba, last winter, my car had the habit of not starting in the morning before work. So for a few weeks, I prepared as much as I could to get up 2 hours earlier to take the bus and arrive home 2 hours later. I would stop at McDonald's on my way home and get a cheeseburger and chocolate shake. Then I'd walk home, feel sick, take a shower, and stay in bed until it was time to go to work the next morning. It reminded me of a study where Group A was told to memorize a complicated series of information and Group B was not. Both groups were then given the option of fruit or candy. Group A tended to choose candy over the fruit, possibly because their mental resources for making good decisions were already depleted from the previous task." I remember that study.
You know, I do.
This makes me think that stress causes people to eat food that requires the least mental effort to consume, which causes more stress and fatigue, which compromises the decision-making process. Is this true, Doc?
Yes, 100%. Absolutely is true. I couldn't exactly follow it completely, but you know what? It's good enough. Yes.
It's sort of like a revolving thing.
That's exactly.
Worse and worse.
That's
and
right.
Worse.
That's exactly. Eat the wrong fast food, and you won't make the right judgments later on.
I think that's kind of what she's done from the nature of it.
She brings up, it's a robust argument, and I think she is right.
Have a question for Zorba? Just send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at zorbapastor.org or come through Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll be with us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0221Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at zorbapastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.